Thank you, George. It's a great honor to be here. I am thankful to the organizers for inviting me to deliver a talk in this symposium. I would like to give a talk on the progress and trends in evapotranspiration measurement and estimation techniques, concepts, challenges, and opportunities. Well, I would like to give a talk basically on the global water cycle, ET modeling history, the concepts, the methods of determining ET, mainly with the direct methods and indirect methods, and limitations and future challenges. Well, we all know the fact that water is the most important resource, is very precious as well. But at the same time, the important issue is the water management. So for the water management, we need to understand the ET concepts very clearly so that we can save the water. So the ET is the second largest term after precipitation in terrestrial water budgets. Then ET is expected to increase with global warming, and ET is a major unknown variable involved in the understanding of the eco-hydrological systems and can amount up to 95% of water balance in dry areas. So this ET is a key variable in irrigation scheduling, water allocation, crop modeling, understanding the water dynamics in wetlands, and quantifying energy moisture exchange between the land surface and the atmosphere. Well, again here you can see this is a global evaporation and the precipitation cycle. Here you can see that 84% evaporates from the ocean and 16% from the surface continents. And again, the 75% falls directly on the oceans and 25% on the continents. Well, again, during the year, the atmosphere transports 9% of oceans evaporation to the continents. Well, the early studies, the first speaker, he has explained about very clearly how the concept has begun from Aristotle. From the literature I have seen from Buffum 1892 stated that over-irrigation was the first and the most serious mistakes made by the earliest settlers. So even it is a fact that even today, in most of the developing countries or the underdevelopment countries, the farmers, they used to think they need to irrigate more so that they can get a good yield. So that concept is still existing. So this is all about the ET modeling history. I'm not going into detail, but it's somehow in 1942 that Blaney-Crandall model was first published from measurements of consumptive water use in alfalfa cotton deciduous trees in the NM Pecos River Valley. Then again in 1942 to 1962, there was a measurement of consumptive use, water use on other crops in other western states. So it continues in 1947, the Hargreaves formula, 48, the Penman equation. Then again in 50, Blaney-Crandall formula, then 1958, then again the Blaney-Crandall formula. So it continues in 1963. The Jensen-Hayes formula was developed and used solar radiation and calculated reference ET. So major, we can see that the transition method was started somewhere in 1960. In the estimated, but the methods began to change from methods based primarily on mean air temperature to methods considering both temperature and solar radiation. So it continues from 1998 and 2005, and most of the places people, they using this Penman-Monti's equation. So what's the basic or the essential requirements of the ET? So there are four main things. One will be the energy, water, vapor pressure gradient, and the wind. So this is a concept, we all know the fact that it's a combination of evaporation plus the transpiration, which covers the soil as well as the vegetation part. And the crop irrigation requirement, which needs an actual crop ET estimation, which leads to water saving. Well, this is again, this is a common equation. We all know that ETC is ET0 multiplied by KC with the crop coefficient. Here the thing is the reference surface characteristics or standard, weather data can be obtained from the meteorological station. At the same time, the crop coefficient KC values can be found in the literature value FAO 56. But the challenge over here is we cannot apply that crop coefficient for every region because we cannot make that thing as a standard one. So here you can see the published crop coefficient values. That is KC is KE, plus KCB, that's the soil evaporation component plus the transpiration component. Here you can say that it incorporates various crop specific parameters, that is crop height, leaf, stomata, properties, etc. And it predicts the ETC under the standard condition, that is the crop growth is not limited to due to various stresses. So this is again the various stages. You can see that that's an initial stage, that's a crop development, that's a mid-season and late season. Well, now I'd like to explain the indirect methods, what we are using it, and the direct method also. So this is the Blanik-Riddle. This is a Blanik-Riddle method. So before that, what this direct method? So anything which measures the water flux directly, we can say that's a direct method. All other we can classify into an indirect method. So in ET direct method, like eddy covariance, lysimeter, PAN, all those things is comes under all other methods we can classify into the indirect methods. So this is the Blanik-Riddle method. So here it's we don't want to have more parameters or the for the data to use these equations, but there are few limitations here. This is not a reference ET method. Again, the crop growth stage coefficient KC is specific to this method and also is not a true crop coefficient. So that is shown to be dependent on climate or the location. Should not be used to compute ET on less than a monthly time step, under predicts in arid climates and under windy or high advection conditions. So the next one is the Hargreaves method. It's also very commonly used and simple equation, which needs a minimal data requirement, a maximum and minimum at temperature. And again, it's a better predictive accuracy in arid climates than the modified Blanik-Riddle. The maximum minimum temperature difference and the extraterrestrial radiations. Well, this is the Kimperley-Penman equation that was developed in 1982. That we call is even as a combination equation because it combines the net radiation and advective energy transfers into one energy balance equation. So here there are the two terms you can see that. So mainly with that wind function as well as the heat function. So there is a limitation again. We need a lot of data using these equations. Well, again, this is a water balance. We know the common equations. We need irrigation data like precipitation, runoff, or deep percolation, or we also need to have the capillary rise and surface flow and surface water content. But the challenge is always how you are going to get these data to find out ET in this. So maybe rainfall or irrigation we can get easily, but surface runoff, deep percolation is again a problem. Well, this is the energy balance. Most of the models in the indirect method, they were using the theory based on the energy. So here it's three major processes actually in that energy balance. One is your sensible heat, the soil heat flux, and the LE, that is the latent heat of evaporation. So the next you can see that is a strong relationship between again the water energy relationship, that is the partitioning of incoming radiation into the various fluxes of energy depends on the water balance and how much water is present in soils and available for evapotranspiration. Well, this is an indirect method. This is a Bowen ratio. This energy balance approach to estimating the convective fluxes seeks to partition energy available into sensible and latent heat terms. So these are the typical values. They are using it 0.1 to 0.3 on the tropical rainforest, 0.4 to 0.8 to the temperate forest and grasslands, 2 to 6 semi-arid regions and extremely dry soils greater than 10 for the deserts. Then these kind of energy balances, which we need to go for a lot of assumptions. Here in this energy balance, Bowen ratio, that main assumptions we need to make, like it's an one-dimensional heat and vapor flow, it's only vertical, and no transfer to and from measurement area from adjacent area. No significant heat storage in the plant canopy. Again, two fluxes originate from the same point on the land surface, atmosphere equally able to transfer heat and water vapor, so turbulence needs not to be considered. Well, this is again, this is the energy balance model using remotely sensed data. Here the examples of energy balance model, it's very common. One is the C-ball, that is the surface energy balance model. The developer is Wim Bastens from Netherlands, and that's another model that's a metric. The developer is Richard Allen from University of Idaho. So here also there are limitations. I have gone through some of the review papers. According to Teresa in 2002, there was a variety of crops in Kimberley resulted in ET estimating the errors ranging from 2.7 to 35% with an average error of 18.2%. So these models need more validation and more study needs to be done using this model. As far as the metric, that is a mapping evapotranspiration with the high resolution and internalized calibration method. So normally this metric, it uses the reference evaporation to represent fully the transferring the vegetation. Well, other remote sensing techniques, it's remotely sensed crop coefficient using vegetation indexes. So you can see from this figure, this is a vegetation spectrum in detail is given. You can see that the crop respond to incident solar radiation that is based on the growing stages and various stresses that may exist during the crop growing period. And the remotely sensed data example, that's a satellite image, record these responses in various electromagnetic bands, that's for example in visible and near infrared bands. So this is again, it's generated by the combining the crop and the canopy responses in multiple spectral bands, example that's the red and near infrared into a single value. Enhances vegetation signal into remotely sensed data and measures of various crop characteristics, that is example of photosynthetic activity, vegetation density, crop health, etc. So these are some of the benefits using the remotely sensed crop coefficients. So it inherently incorporates the actual site conditions, stresses that may exist, and the detailed site the crop information is not necessary as in the case of our previous approach. Spatially distributed results over large extent, variability within and among the individual fields. So limitation for the remote sensed crop coefficients, its inherent shortcomings of remote sensing data. It may be a cloud cover, availability, or the resolution. Well, apart from this, there are various models, various researchers has been published of the ET partitioning models. In that, the first one is the Shuttleworth-Wallace model. So this model was introduced in 1985, suggested an analytical approach to ET partitioning based on two Penman-Monthy equations. One was Penman 1948 and the another one is the Monthy in 1965. So here you can see two equations, that Penman-Monthy for the crop and the Penman-Monthy for the soil. Then again, the next model, that's an indirect method. Again, this is an energy and water balance model. So here, again, there are... it was developed by Lascano et al. In 1987. It's used to compute water energy balances at the soil surface and at the plant canopy. So here basically they want to solve it numerically, the evaporation and transpiration separately using the inputs of soil properties, plant inputs and atmospheric inputs. The next one is again the CUPID and DPV AP. Here also they used to compute the evaporation and transpiration separately. Then E is computed using by the transfer coefficient, and then they used to have the T. The transpiration is computed by dividing the canopy into layers and leaf angle classes using an upper boundary condition for air temperature, vapor pressure, and wind velocity. So the another one is the soil, water, energy, and transpiration model. This was first presented by Damon and Simmons in 1994. Here, the interaction between the evaporation and transpiration is quantified via a simple two-layer approach. that is the soil as well as the leaves, without requiring the detailed information concerning the canopy structures. So the next is one. This is again the two source energy balance model. So we all know that this basically the Priestley-Taylor equation was used in this two source energy balance model, but the range was given is very higher. It's from 0.5 to 1.4. It's a huge range, so which needs a lot of calibration. And this needs to be calibrated because it's an empirical, because normally we take for the dry to green from 0.1 to 0.99. The next one is the FAO dual KC model. So it was first given by Allen et al. In 1998. Well, this computes the ET of a well-watered crop using an empirically defined crop specific multiplication factor KC in combination with the reference ET. This dual KC approach that divides the KC factor into a plant component, that is KCB, and the soil components, that is KC. That's how it works, that FAO dual KC model. Then again, there is another model. This is also in the indirect method. This is Hydrus 1D. Well, it's a public domain Windows-based modeling environment for simulation of water, heat and solid movement, which was the Simnick et al. In 2008, he has presented this Hydrus one-dimensional model. This model numerically solves the Richward equation for variably saturated media and the convection dispersion equation for heat and solute transport based on the Fick's law. Well, this is again the eddy covariance. Already our previous speakers also they have mentioned about this eddy covariance. The measurement of vertical transfer of water vapor driven by the convective motion, it directly measures the flux by sensing the properties of eddies as they pass through a measurement level and instantaneous basis. So there are a lot of advantages in eddy covariance. Well, it inherently averages the small scale variability of fluxes over a surface area that increases with measurement height. That measurements are continuous and in high temporal resolution. Fluxes are determined without disturbing the surface being monitored. Great tool to look at the ecosystem physiology. Disadvantages of eddy covariance, when it cannot work properly when you have a turbulence, gas filling issues are relatively expensive. Most of the developing countries and other developing countries, they cannot implement this system everywhere. It's having a problem in stationarity issues and open path IRGA issues. So basically the eddy covariance method is more accurate when the atmospheric conditions, if it supports the wind, temperature, humidity and CO2 are steady, then we are going to get a good result under this. The underlying vegetation is homogeneous and it is situated on flat terrain for an extended distance of wind. So these are the common, still in most of the developing countries, people they rely on PAN. There are different kinds of PAN available. And lysimeters, there are different types, again, weighing type, non-weighing type. And it's the major limitation in this lysimeter, again, it's very expensive and we cannot install wherever we want. Well, these are the limitations and future challenges I would like to give based on my presentation. Throughout the ET, that the estimating, the measuring ET with high confidence at large scales, that is the basin, multiple fields, non-uniform landscapes, etc., remains to be a challenge. The second point, direct methods are more accurate but limited in terms of capturing the spatial variability. Then the third point, the installation, operating cost for direct methods, that's example, lysimeter, eddy covariance can be a limiting factor. The last one, the remote sensing technique of estimating ET can capture spatial variability but have its own challenges. That's the cloud, spatial and temporal resolution, partitioning, extrapolation. These are the major challenges even in remote sensing. Thank you very much for your...
Thank you, Dr. Pramod.